Chapter 2. Jonathan Grave awoke as something heavy punched him in the chest. He jerked upright, ready to fight, but as he reached for the .45 on his nightstand, he heard the phone blasting, "Onward, Christian Soldiers," and the picture cleared for him, despite the darkness. Joe Dog, the 80-pound black lab who occasionally claimed Jonathan to be her master, hated phones. Jonathan must have missed a previous ring or two, and the beast was tired of the noise. He lifted the covers away and padded naked across the master bedroom to lift his phone from its charger on the dresser. He'd learned a long time ago that calls that came in after bedtime, was it really only 3:15, brought important news. The short walk ensured that he'd be at least awake enough to understand what was being said. The ringtone told him that Father Dom D'Angelo would be on the other end. "Morning, Padre," Jonathan said. His voice sounded like he'd gargled with glass.
"Working late or getting up early?"
"Hi, Dig. Come downstairs and let me in. It's cold out here and we need to talk." Jonathan had known Dom since college, long enough to recognize the urgency in his tone.
"Hang tight," he said. "2 minutes, max."
With the phone still in his hand, he swatted the switch for the overhead light and walked 6 steps over to the leather chair in front of the window where he stepped into his bug-out jeans. He always draped clothes nearby when he went to bed, a habit that stretched back to his days in the unit. In any emergency, dressed was better than undressed, and speed mattered. Joe Dog, fully awake and ready to go, apparently expected something good in her future. Her swinging tail was forcing her hind legs into a jig.
"This isn't about you," Jonathan told her.
But his voice just spun her up more. He opened the bedroom door and she was off. In its previous life, Jonathan's home had been a firehouse. As a boy, he would hang out there in his spare time, shining brass and playing poker with the firefighters. They'd called him their mascot, and he wore the title proudly. After he fell into a little money, okay, a lot of money, and the powers that be determined that Fire Station 14 would be better situated out on the highway, he bought the place and turned the first 2 floors of the sprawling structure into his home, and the 3rd floor into the offices for his company, Security Solutions. He spent lavishly on the renovation, converting the space into a warm oasis of leather, wood, collectible art, and oriental rugs. While the external architecture remained the same, including the big roll-up doors, all but one of which had been permanently secured, he'd gutted the interior. The brass pole remained, but it led nowhere, merely a decoration. The hardwood steps felt cold against his feet as he made his way down to the main level, where Joe Dog had already figured out that someone was at the door. Out of habit and an abundance of caution, Jonathan opened the drawer in the table adjacent to the door to reveal the chambered Glock 19 pistol that always resided there. Had he not known that the visitor was a friend, the Glock would have been in his hand, shielded by his thigh. Jonathan opened the door to reveal Father Dom standing a few feet back, his hands shoved into the pockets of a beige canvas ranch jacket, and his expression dour.
"Hey, Dom, what's up?"
Jonathan stepped aside to leave room for the priest to pass.
"Come on in."
Dom tipped his chin as a thank you and stepped forward. "We have a serious problem," he said. He walked straight to the 3-cushion leather sofa and helped himself to a seat. "I'm missing a couple of kids." Something stirred in Jonathan's gut. Among the significant charitable causes Jonathan supported, the one of which he was most proud and most anonymous, was his perpetual endowment of Resurrection House, a residential school for the children of incarcerated parents. Rez House sat on Church Street, up the hill from St. Catherine's Catholic Church, on the grounds of Jonathan's childhood mansion. He deeded the massive structure and its acres of property to the church for $1 on the condition that it be used in perpetuity as Rez House. A security breach a while back had resulted in Jonathan hiring a full security team to keep the place safe.
"Missing kids is a scary phrase, Dom," Jonathan said. "What do you mean?"
"Father Timothy left this afternoon with that new social worker we hired at Rez House, Pam Hastings, to escort two brothers from a foster home out past Lexington, but he hasn't come back yet. No phone call, nothing." Jonathan sat on the opposite sofa, facing the priest. Jonathan had never met Pam Hastings, but he knew Father Tim to be an assistant pastor, or some such, the title didn't matter, of St. Kate's. Quiet and always friendly, he was known among the parishioners as Father Flash, having reduced the duration of his masses to just under an hour each. During Saturday confessions, his line was always the longest, because he also had a reputation for easy penance.
"That's a long drive. You talking Botetourt County, that area?"
"Right. A little town called Haverville, about 5 hours from here."
"Well, come on, Dom. That's a 10-hour round trip. Maybe he stopped."
"Maybe he did," Dom agreed. "But he would have called. Certainly by this hour he would have called. At least one of them would have called." Jonathan wanted to find a way to talk him off the ledge, to find a way to conclude that this probably was nothing. But it truly was very late.
"Have you called the place they were supposed to be picked up from? Did Father Tim arrive?"
Dom was leaning far forward, his elbows forming a tripod on his knees. "I don't know. I called, but no one answered. It could be because of the hour when I called, I just don't know." Jonathan understood the concern, but he didn't know why Dom was here.
"How can I help?"
Dom seemed to be stumped by the question, too.
I don't know, to be honest. I figured you had contacts you could reach out to. You seem to know everybody."
Jonathan watched his friend's eyes. There was real fear in them.
Yes, there were people he could wake up,
but at this hour that was an aggressive move to make. On the other hand, this was Dom asking.
"I know just the guy," Jonathan said.
He pulled his phone from the pocket of his jeans, scrolled through his contacts list, and pressed a button. When the line on the other end shifted to voicemail, he clicked off and punched the number again. The line rang again.
"I can do this all night," Jonathan muttered.
On the fourth ring of the second go-round, the line connected, and the very angry voice of the Fisherman's Cove police chief said,
"Honest to God, Digger, if there's not a dead body in your foyer."
"Missing kids, Doug,"
Jonathan said, getting ahead of the idle threat.
"On their way to Rez House, and they never showed up. Father Timothy, too, along with a social worker. Dom's worried that..."
"Stop there,"
Doug Kramer said.
"Where are you?"
"I'm at home."
"The Padre there with you?"
"Yes."
"How long have they been missing?"
Jonathan relayed the question, then put his phone on speaker.
"I can't give you a hard number on the time," Dom said. "Tim and Pam left this afternoon, no, yesterday afternoon, I guess, to go out to Haverville and come back with two kids, two brothers, Ryder and Jeffrey Kendall. I haven't heard anything from any of them since."
"Where the hell is Haverville?"
"Botetourt County," Jonathan said.
"Okay. And where the hell is Botetourt County?"
"Way west," Dom said. "Closer to Tennessee than here, but Father Tim would have called me if there was a delay."
"Murphy rules the universe," Kramer said.
"If they broke down,
It would only happen where there is no cell service. The boys are 11 and 13, Dom said. Their mom was just arrested. Their dad is dead. Silence on the other end.
Come on, Doug, Jonathan coaxed. 11 and 13. Yeah, could be nothing, but...
Give me 30 minutes, Kramer said. I'll get my head straight and pull on some clothes, then head over to your place. You better have coffee brewing. 28 minutes later, Joe Dog jumped to life and scrabbled her way out from her sleeping perch under the coffee table that separated the two sofas. She had an uncanny way of knowing before the bell rang that someone was at the door. It wasn't yet 4 in the morning, but Doug Kramer was showered, shaved, and fully clothed in a freshly pressed khaki uniform, complete with gleaming Sam Brown belt and polished gold badge. Jonathan greeted him with a steaming mug of coffee.
Cream and 400 sugars, just as you like it, he said. I wouldn't press my luck on the humor thing at this hour, Kramer said.
He hooked the mug's ring with his forefinger and wrapped his other hand around the barrel for warmth.
Morning, Dom.
The priest was standing at the sofa. I hope this turns out to be a big mistake, he said. Kramer prepared himself with a deep breath and took a sip of coffee.
Let's all sit down.
From body language alone, Jonathan prepared himself for bad news. He let Doug take the spot he used to have on the sofa while he helped himself to the William and Mary rocker that was his favorite anyway, thanks to too many years of back-yanking parachute drops. I'm not getting a happy vibe out of you, Dom said. His face was drawn tight.
That's because I have bad news, Kramer said. While I was getting ready, I had our dispatcher do some checking, you know, to see if anything bad has happened on the roads or whatever.
His face turned to stone as he cast a glance toward Jonathan and then returned his gaze to Father Dom.
There was a car found on a back road where Botetourt County meets Bedford County, between Salem and Lynchburg. Local sheriff's department says it looks like it might be a carjacking. There was blood on the ground, but no sign of people. A couple of shell casings, but that doesn't mean anything out in that part of the world. People shoot all the time.
They do that here, too, Doug, Jonathan said. What about the car? Who's that registered to?
It's a rental.
Dom's head drooped. Tim used a rental car for the transfer. It was too far a drive for his own vehicle, and the res house van is in for service.
Do you know which company he used?
I could probably find out, Dom said. Who leased the car they found?
It's only been a few minutes, Kramer said. Not a lot of time for questions yet. It's a pretty sure thing that an abandoned car didn't jump to the top of their to-do list, even in a place like wherever the hell that place is.
No mention of the boys?
Jonathan asked.
No mention of anybody. As far as they're concerned, there's nobody to mention.
Jonathan ran it all through his head. He flat out didn't believe in coincidences. Building on Doug Kramer's commitment to Murphy's Law, Jonathan was a disciple of the codicil that declared when two or more unpleasant events happened in short proximity of time or space, they were presumed to be related until proven otherwise. In this case, the blood, shell casings, and missing children told the story of a murder and a kidnapping.
What do you know about the parents, Dom?
No more than I know about any of our students before they arrive. A name, and in this case, I know that their father was killed in the raid on their house and that their mother is in custody. The rest will be in the file that comes with them.
Is she rich?
Kramer asked. He looked to Jonathan.
I presume you've jumped right to kidnapping.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have no idea, Dom said. It's not like we do credit checks. Tuition at Res House is free.
We've all three of us got internet machines in our pockets, Jonathan observed, retrieving his phone. You've said their names twice, Dom, but refresh my memory.
Jeffrey and Ryder Kendall, Dom said. I don't remember the mother's name. I could go back to the rectory and get it.
Kendall, the chief said, his eyebrows knitted together in a scowl. Boy, that name rings a bell.
Jonathan entered the name into his phone and laughed.
Not exactly a unique name, is it?
Might her name be Constance?
Kramer asked. It could be, Dom said. In fact, I think it is. Jonathan entered the name into his search engine and got nothing.
What are you seeing that I'm not?
He asked Kramer.
You can't search where I'm searching, Kramer said. The Constance Kendall I'm seeing here has a federal warrant out on her, DEA and FBI both. It's a felony pickup order, but that's all it shows.
Is that unusual?
Jonathan asked.
I mean that the warrant doesn't say what it's for?
Very.
What does that mean?
I have no idea, Kramer said. It's rare enough to qualify as unique.
And does unique imply important enough to kill or kidnap children?
Jonathan asked. Kramer laughed.
You like running down a single track, don't you?
11 and 13,
Jonathan reminded yet again.
Whatever this is, that makes it worth tracking down.
What does that mean? Kramer asked.
That means I'm going to do what I do best, Jonathan said. I'm going to bring them back home.
Kramer stood.
And that's my cue to leave.
The suddenness of his move startled Jonathan.
Just like that?
He stood too.
Don't take it personally, Kramer said. I've never really understood what exactly you do for a living, but I've always sensed, as an officer of the law and of the court, that I'm better off for my ignorance. Am I wrong?
Jonathan smiled.
Thanks for coming by, Doug.
He walked the chief to the door.
Keep the coffee cup, Jonathan said. I have lots more just like it.
Kramer pulled up short as he crossed the threshold. His face showed worry. We've known each other long enough to speak plainly, right?
I'm hurt that you would even ask, Jonathan said.
Be careful, Kramer said. Around here, you're a big deal and you get away with stuff. That shootout at the mansion, for example. Jonathan waved it off. A terrorist cell had come far too close for comfort not too long ago, and the results had brought headlines that no town council ever wants to deal with. Kramer continued,
Don't make like that's nothing. It's something. It's a big something. Anyway, I could keep your name out of it because I'm your friend, and I know you're coming from an honest place.
You don't want me hurting strangers,
Jonathan offered, cutting to the chase.
Well, not you so much, Kramer said. But this deals with kids.
He left the rejoinder for Jonathan to fill in the blanks.
Boxers,
Jonathan said. Kramer hiked his shoulders, a silent yes. Brian Vandemulebrocky, a.k.a. Boxers, was one of Jonathan's closest friends. They'd worked together since forever. Nearly 7 feet tall and topping the scales at a deeply classified number, Boxers, also a.k.a. Big Guy, lived in a world where subtlety didn't exist. He was simultaneously kind and lethal. Jonathan knew of no one more loyal and dedicated to bringing justice where it was needed. He also knew of no one who showed less remorse when justice required killing. He was the number one person you wanted on your team when life got shitty. Boxers had a soft spot in his heart for kids and a very hard spot for those who harmed them. Kramer explained, I'm just saying I have no pull in that part of the state. Jonathan smiled.
I appreciate the warning.
Kramer shifted his stance.
Have you had many dealings with the Virginia State Police?
Can't say that I have.
Well, out in that part of the world, they're the law, and they take their laws really, really seriously.
Translation: don't expect any breaks from them if you break the law even a little bit.
I appreciate the warning, Doug. If you don't mind me asking, please keep an eye out on the wires. If any other details surface, please reach out and let me know.
Kramer hefted his mug as a toast.
Will do. Thanks for the coffee.
As the chief walked away, Jonathan closed the door and turned to Dom.
It's time to wake people up, he said.